7BR Part Heard. Hello, and welcome to 7BR's Part Heard, the podcast that traverses the legal landscape, examining issues across multiple practice areas, guided by the diverse expertise of our members. I'm Rhys Palmer, Chambers Paralegal. We're joined today by 7BR member Kat Shields, who's here today to discuss the Court of Appeal judgment, Crown against Jackson, in which 7BR member Alex Young appeared instructed by the CPS. The Court of Appeal praised Alex's admirable written and oral submissions, which they found most helpful. Kat is one of Chambers' most recent tenants, having completed pupillage in 2018. She's a Grade 2 CPS prosecutor and regularly prosecutes and defends in the Crown Court. Before joining 7BR, Kat was a secondary school teacher and then a research assistant at the Law Commission, where she focused on reforms to criminal legislation. She also provided monthly updates to Part D of Blackstone's criminal practice over a two-year period. Kat, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Rhys. It's great to be back on Part Heard.
So when we do our episodes on judgments, we always like to just start with a brief background and a history to the matter. And if you could just explain how we ended up at the Court of Appeal, please.
Yeah, of course. This is an interesting case. So in short, the facts were that the appellant, Mr. Jackson, and the complainant in this matter were in a relationship at the turn of the century. There's a phrase to make the listeners feel a little bit older. Their relationship ended in 2001. They had no children, and the complainant said that there was no reason really that they should have been in contact again. However, between 2001 and 2009, the appellant conducted what can only be described as a very unpleasant campaign of harassment against the complainant, his ex-partner, and her new husband. There were a series of criminal offences committed by Mr. Jackson, and this culminated in a dangerous driving incident in 2009 where he drove his vehicle at the complainant and her new husband a number of times. So he ended up going to court, being convicted of dangerous driving, and upon conviction, he was given a restraining order lasting for 10 years not to contact his ex-partner and her new husband. Now, fast forward 10 years, there's no breaches of the order. Mr. Jackson has not been in touch at all with these two people since the order was made. But the complainant wrote to the court or applied to the court to extend the restraining order for another 10 years. And that was granted by the Crown Court, that extension. And the appellant appealed that. So he said that it was simply not necessary for that order to have been made. So there was then a hearing in the Court of Appeal, which is what we're going to talk about.
And before we talk about that, can we just take a step back and just consider what a restraining order is, how they're obtained, and why?
Absolutely. A restraining order is actually a civil order, which is made by a criminal court. And if you breach a restraining order, you can incur criminal penalties. So the power to make a restraining order comes from the Protection from Harassment Act 1997. And you can have a restraining order given to you if you are acquitted of an offence or if you are convicted of an offence. And I should say at this point that the power to order a restraining order on conviction is now found under Section 360 of the Sentencing Act 2020, so no longer under the 1997 Act. The test for a restraining order on conviction is that a court dealing with a person convicted of an offence can make an order to protect the victim or victims of that offence or any other person mentioned in the order from conduct which amounts to harassment or which will cause a fear of violence. So a restraining order can then prohibit the convicted defendant from doing anything described in a restraining order.
And is that what was happening in this case and how it was used?
Absolutely, yes. So in this case, there was a restraining order made on conviction for the dangerous driving offence, and the defendant, the appellant in the Court of Appeal, was prohibited from contacting his ex-partner, the complainant, or her new husband, directly or indirectly, for 10 years.
So if there's a restraining order made against you, how does one go about removing that?
There are two ways. The first way is quite simply to wait for it to expire. So you might be given a restraining order for 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. You could just sit back and wait. Or your second option is to apply to the court to revoke or vary that order. And the Protection from Harassment Act and the Sentencing Act both say that you can do this, but don't actually explain what test there is to be met if you want to apply to vary or revoke your order. And that's part of the question which comes into play in this appeal. So there are some criminal procedure rules which sit alongside the Act, and they say that if you want to vary or revoke an order, you should apply to the court in writing, explaining what material circumstances have changed since the order was made and why the order should be varied or revoked as a result. So that's the idea if you want to vary or revoke, but what about in practice? And that is the issue going to the heart of this appeal, particularly if a complainant, a victim of harassment, wants to vary an order.
And again, that's what was happening here. It was the victim, the complainant in this case, who was seeking to have the restraining order extended rather than the person who had the restraining order made against them.
That's absolutely right. As we were coming up to the end of the 10-year period, the victim of harassment said that she wanted the order to be extended rather than simply to lapse.
And is that something from the complainant's perspective that can easily be done? Is there any test that they need to satisfy?
The test is, in theory, the same as the one I've just set out. However, what is said in the criminal procedure rules about a material change in circumstances doesn't appear anywhere in the Protection from Harassment Act or the Sentencing Act. So that was the question for the Court of Appeal, whether or not the complainant needed to show a material change in circumstances since that order was first imposed in order to have it extended.
So when it came to the actual hearing and the making of the application, what were the arguments that each party presented to the court?
Well, from the appellant's point of view, he was very displeased that the Crown Court had just extended the order for another 10 years upon the complainant's application. And so he said to the Court of Appeal that, first of all, the application to extend shouldn't have been entertained at all by the Crown Court because there'd been no change of circumstances since the order was imposed. And his second point was that even if the Crown Court had been entitled to hear the complainant's application, it should have dismissed it because extending the restraining order wasn't necessary or proportionate given the context here. There'd been no breaches, no further contact between the parties. In relation to the first point about whether or not there were changes circumstances, that is crucial. And that was actually a novel point of law. Was the complainant, the person named in the restraining order, actually required to demonstrate a change in circumstances on an application to vary a restraining order? So let's look at the arguments on both sides. The appellant simply said that the onus or the burden was on the Crown or a person making an application to vary to show that the circumstances had changed. The Crown took a slightly different stance. The CPS was actually instructed in this case at quite short notice to put forward what their position was because the Court of Appeal realised that this case could have implications for other cases involving restraining orders in the future. So the arguments put forward by the Crown were as follows. They drew a distinction between a person who is the subject of a restraining order, so a defendant, and the prosecution, and on the other hand, a person who is named in an order to be protected. They said that a person who is subject to a restraining order, a defendant, and the prosecution can make submissions at the time an order is imposed about its terms and about how long it should last. But the person who's named in the order to be protected can't do that. So at the sentencing hearing, the victim of harassment can't say, I'd like an order for this long and these are the terms I'd like. They don't have that voice. So there's a distinction to be drawn there. A person who's named in an order to be protected also can't appeal against the duration or the terms of an order, whereas the defendant can. So the very first time that a protected person can actually address a court about the terms or duration of a restraining order is on an application to vary it. And the Crown argued that there should therefore be no requirement on the protected person to show a change in circumstances. Instead, on an application made by them, the court should consider afresh whether an order is necessary and proportionate in the varied terms sought and have regard to all relevant circumstances. The Crown also argued that requiring complainants to demonstrate a change of circumstances when applying to vary a restraining order would be an undue and serious fetter on what is an important right for them.
And so when weighing up these arguments, what did the judge conclude?
Well, the Crown was successful in its arguments to resist the point made by the appellant that the Crown Court shouldn't have entertained the application at all. The Court of Appeal then went on to agree that there was no hard-edged requirement for a complainant making a first application to vary a restraining order to prove that there had been a change in circumstances since the order had first been made. However, they then said that the view taken by the sentencing judge at the time an order is first imposed is bound to be a highly relevant starting point, and they would anticipate that most successful applications to extend or tighten a restraining order would be based on some material which was not before the original sentencing court and justifies a change of approach. So there may be some further information required on such an application. In relation to this case specifically, the Court of Appeal went back and highlighted the test for obtaining a restraining order in the first place. The purpose of a restraining order, they said, is to protect a complainant from future conduct, not just to assuage their fears or to allay their fears about the consequences of past conduct. And although past conduct can go to the issue of whether an order is necessary, complainant's concern or fears about the expiry of an order doesn't alter the objective risk of future harassment actually occurring. So in conclusion, the appeal in this case was allowed. So the appeal against that extension of the restraining order for a further 10 years was allowed, and the restraining order no longer applied to this particular appellant. The Court of Appeal had considered necessity of the extension of the order and had looked at whether or not it was required in this case and decided that a further 10 years was not necessary, and in fact, an extension was not necessary.
Thanks, Kat. That was a nice, clear and succinct explanation of the judgment. Was there anything else that you thought was of interest or worth pointing out in this matter?
There are a couple of interesting questions which come out of this judgment, which could lead to some case law in the future. The first is that in its conclusions, the Court of Appeal said that at least in the case of a complainant making a first application to vary, there was no hard-edged requirement to prove a change of circumstances. Well, that leads to the question, what about a complainant who makes multiple applications to vary a restraining order during its life, or multiple applications to extend it? How far does the lack of a hard-edged requirement to prove a change of circumstances actually go? And the second point is that this case applied to the complainant's right to vary or extend a restraining order. It didn't look into the circumstances which might apply where the prosecution applies to vary an order or the defendant applies to vary an order. So it'll be interesting to see whether this judgment has an impact on those circumstances which could arise in the future in relation to restraining orders.
Great. Thank you, Kat. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you very much, Rhys.
Thank you to our listeners. We hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Part Heard. To hear more like this, you can find all our episodes on Chamber's website and other major streaming platforms such as Apple Music, SoundCloud, and Spotify. Until next week, thank you and goodbye.